interrupting all programs.
Good morning, everybody. Here, just tune in to Punkonomics here on WPRK, Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College, the best in basement radio. And we have a special guest today. But first, let me introduce to you the host of our show, Dr. Benny Balick.
Our guest, returns after one guest, one time, Jay Gordon. I don't know who's been looking at stuff I've been posting at some point at Coagealed to discuss essentially racism. And we're not that we're going to cover it in an hour, but we're going to stab.
You need a long time for that one.
Right, we need to stab at it. But as I speak, I see like my announcement. I understand we are now playing live and loud at the pool at Rollins College.
Here we are.
Nobody's Brody. I believe the lifeguard is actually needs a shout out here. Hey, Brett Gerlinger.
Hey, Brett.
He's just huddled cold somewhere, I think, in the corner. probably, right?
What is he watching? Polar bears? I mean, is this cold?
Us. Apparently, he has nothing better to do.
Oh, okay. I thought maybe he was trying to save some lives out there on the beach.
Right.
The pool is heated.
The pool is heated. Oh, right. Electronically, I mean, not solar. Like,
That's right,
sure.
It is Rollins.
Coal, is it? There's a little coal. We have a little coal furnace in the back. Oh, dear. Okay, listen, here's the motivation, right? Here's where this starts. And, you know, it's you have to be there. There are certainly some people who make this topic entertaining out there, and I've posted a whole bunch of stuff on our Facebook page, and I'm hoping, you know, some of it somewhat truly not the kind of thing we see necessarily on the mainstream. A lot of Dr. Cornel West and a little Richard Pryor and even a little Paul Mooney and stuff like that. So if you're interested, I should... where did it all start? Well, I didn't watch the Oscars, frankly. I don't think I've even seen a single one of the contesting films, really. Or did I? No, except for Hunger Games, which, incidentally, I really like. I mean, the movie's okay. The books, all three of them, are pretty cool. So maybe another time, because I find it interesting. It's a pretty revolutionary if you take her seriously. So it's funny to me always how you know, people who would certainly not be advocating a violent uprising against elites kind of read this stuff. And I ask students, I mean, hey, what do you think about this stuff? It's pretty hardcore. It's great anyway. It's a wonderful read, I think, too. You know, it's a fun read. It's on multiple levels. But anyway, and the post-Oscar, you can't help it today, right? So in your feed, unless you're a purist like Jay, who left Facebook. You read the feed.
You left Facebook,
you
did.
One of those, the few.
All right, yeah.
Take it out of your veins.
I try to get out, but they keep pulling me back in. You know?
You can't. It's the network effect. A billion point for work. To do this, how can you?
For school, now it's...
I know.
Yeah.
I got out of it because it was... terrible. If anyone wants to know why, they can check out Stallman.org/Facebook.
Ooh.
He has a list of reasons as to why Facebook isn't your friend.
No, it's not.
Oh, no,
it really isn't. It really isn't.
No. Of course, why wouldn't it be? It's a for-profit corporation. It's not, you know...
I dropped out of it.
It's like falling in love with a prostitute. I mean, no, but you're thinking that a prostitute you're paying for is in love with you. I mean, it's
right.
To think that private corporations have your interest in mind. I mean, they're not supposed to.
Right.
And don't pretend to. But anyway, so Oscar night, right? And then the whole Seth MacFarlane hate fest started.
Oh,
Seth MacFarlane, right? The guy, as far as all I know about him, is Family Guy, which I like very much, actually. I find it particularly, I saw them all, I think, extremely entertaining. I think it's good social criticism. It's not nearly at the level of South Park, but it's
true.
Good. It's a different model, too. South Park is written. I mean, there's actually really analysis going on, you know? Family Guy is just a kind of absurd caricature of the worst of America, you know, basically, right? And I figured all this, Seth MacFarlane, racist, sexist, disgusting, you know? And I'm thinking, well, I suppose you can say about the characters of Family Guy the same thing. I mean, that's the humor. And then I say to myself, and I made a facetious post, like, well, I mean, kind of, everybody shut up. I mean, leave him alone. Maybe
who are you protecting? Who's the real racist sexist? How about the cabal of dirty old men known as the, you know, what they call it? Academy of Movies, you know,
who gave each other prizes,
who gave four prizes to women directors, thus probably confirming in everybody's mind that, you know, it's a male-dominated field. But if you look at seriously at, especially the highbrow, the art, the innovative cinema over the years from India to China and everything in between, you have a lot of women. But not any Oscar nights. So I say maybe Seth MacFarlane did exactly what he does in Family Guy. He poked a nasty, clear mirror at the faces of everybody and said, look at you. You are like me. You are a bunch of racist, sexist bleeps.
Right.
And I'm the buffoon who's showing you who you really are. So I came out as his defense, and that was kind of the motivation. And then let's start hitting that. And we spent all night in my economic media and propaganda class that night discussing racism, and more specifically, the N-word, the whole kind of.
But you know, with a Family Guy, I mean, outside the fact that I do agree with you, you know, and I definitely applaud him, it still was sort of a shameless plug, if you think about it, because now, for every person that is hating at him, there's at least two friends of that person who's going like, yeah, you know, he's making a point. So he's got more audience now, whether it's negative or positive, he just finished self-advertising himself to no end.
Right. I think what was ironic about the entire Seth MacFarlane thing and everyone's outrage is that they don't understand how the Hollywood industry works. It's in the business of pathologizing whole cultures, right? It's in the business of pathologizing non-whites. It pathologizes women, gays, you name it. And so the Oscars is really, you know, as I said on Twitter and said to Margaret, you know, Kimberly of Black Agenda Report, it's a big racist party. It's a party where racists and sexists and everyone gets together to, as you said, slap themselves on the back and give themselves awards and celebrate themselves. And, you know, everyone says, okay, Seth MacFarlane is so outrageous, but no one uses their critical faculties when it comes to various movies like, say, Django, where even progressive people like the anti-racist Tim Wise thinks that this is a great film, and it's radical, sort of like Ivan Dixon's The Spook Who Sat by the Door sort of thing. And when in reality it was a slick piece of packaging, right? It's like piece of white supremacist packaging, because at the end of it, as I understood, everyone thought that the villain was not the slave owner, but Samuel L. Jackson, the house slave. And a friend of mine, when actually reviewing the movie, said that Samuel L. Jackson was far more racist than the slave himself. Right, and I found that very telling, not only because the guy is completely confused, but the fact that he thinks that he thinks that the villain of the show is Samuel L. Jackson should tell us something. It should tell us that this setting of slavery is a backdrop for the Mandingo fights that, you know, people found very horrible, right? So it's a Mandingo fight between Jamie Foxx and Samuel L. Jackson. And and people think that, this is a really nice and progressive movie, and, he's shooting white people and killing people. And what was interesting was that Ishmael Reed pointed out that, okay, he's the white people he's killing are a bunch of lower class whites. You know, he's not killing plantation owners. The bounty hunter is kind of
Let's give credit to Dave Chappelle, by the way, for the Time Hater skit in which he does kill.
Oh, right,
again,
right.
Again, in a loop.
In a skip.
And it was very controversial, you know. Why is it in America, 21st century, controversial for a bunch of black guys to come back in time wearing, like, 18th century costumes and shoot dead a slave owner, you know? What's the problem?
I haven't seen the movie. If you can...
Neither have I, frankly. I've yet to pirate it.
If you can give us kind of like a little bit of the top of what it's about, so the audience, because I'm sure there's a lot of people out there that haven't seen it either.
So I haven't
so much buzz about it.
I haven't really seen it either. I've just seen the plot, and
I'm
not
giving
that
it my money.
It's a movie about, you know, Jamie Foxx, who's Django, and
it's a Tarantino
The only thing I know about it is that there is seems to be a controversy because they put out some G.I. Joe type figures or action figures of the characters in it, and there's a huge divide among the minorities. You know, people are saying, well, okay, is this another way of showing their racism, or is this just kind of like their marketing to make money, kind of like a Marvel Hasbro type, you know, G.I. Joe
thing. Well, it's
thing.
The business. I mean, let's clear. I mean, let's be very honest, always honest, you know. Yeah, we didn't see it. I mean, we haven't gotten around cinema. I don't know who has time, you know, these days, middle class, right? You work three jobs. But we read, I mean, we read probably at least 30, 40 pages about it, including detailed summaries. So, you know, let's not certainly spoilers. I think I probably have some spoilers that will spoil the movie potentially. It's very cathartic in the sense that a well-meaning audience, you know, sees all this revenge against the horrific brutality, and Tarantino knows how to do brutality. Though he always kind of makes it so sexy, which is a bit of a problem. I'll admit, Tarantino is certainly, I think, not as good a director as he thinks he is. Right. Not even as good a director as most people think he is. He's a pretty good director.
True.
But remember, the revenge, as you know, Alfred points out, is individualized.
Exactly.
Because he's actually going to save his wife, who has been captured, or he's been separated from her. And
he's not fighting for his people, for the cause,
for
justice.
He's not fighting
for his woman.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. He's not fighting for the people or the cause. But the way how he can do that fight is that he actually gets bought out by a bounty hunter.
Yep.
Okay.
So when he's killing, he is an extension of that guy's will. Mm. So this is another aspect of the movie that actually made it very racist, because it's a white savior kind of flick. So you have someone like the columnist David Sirota at Salon talking about how Hollywood loves these white savior flicks, and he has a column about Django, and he says that Django is this amazing movie. It brings up this conversation about white privilege, about whether or not an African-American director could make such, you know, nice revolutionary movie like Quentin Tarantino. And, his point stands.
23rd century.
Because if you look at something, you know, and I mentioned this film, and it's out there on YouTube, The Spook Who Sat by the Door, a blaxploitation flick about the first African-American CIA agent who infiltrates the CIA, and he leaves and resigns, and then he goes back to the streets of Chicago and takes a gang of kids and trains them into a guerrilla army.
Wow.
And starts an entire sort of revolution against the white power structure, right? So you had a director who did make that movie, and under pressure from actually even the FBI, the movie was pulled.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, the big picture, as I call it, that was actually presented in an earlier film called Chasing Amy, believe it or not. The director is Kevin Smith, and he does a lot of movies with Ben Affleck and all that. Because anyway, great director. But the opening scene and the way they present it is they're at a comic book convention in New Jersey, and the actual characters, or at least the heroes, are about, they write comic books. So in this convention, there's this black guy, and he's standing there, and he's kind of like pushing his comic book and all that, and he's talking about how in Star Wars, you know, all of a sudden, Darth Vader, who is always, you know, dressed up in black or symbolizing, you know, the, in his words, the African American community, and then all of a sudden, when it comes down to, I guess, the exorcism, or when he becomes the good guy again, they reveal a white guy. So it's funny how, you know, in certain movies, you know, they kind of present that, but it's not really shown to the public as
that's how propaganda works. You know, when it's obvious, it doesn't. Even the Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels was explicit about it in his essays on propaganda, which I have on my Kindle. You know, it's much better a romantic comedy. Even the Nazis, you know, the direct stuff that we see in museums of the Holocaust and stuff, a lot of these things didn't work very well and ended up not being used, not being aired very often. Much more efficient as a romantic comedy, where the bad guy happens to be a Jewish banker and happens to lust after young blonde women. They don't even have to spell it out.
Right,
nobody's
right,
even
right.
saying it necessarily. Or,
right.
you know,
no, exactly,
the more
exactly.
you don't see it, the better it works, essentially. But I want to go back to what Jay said, because that's like a key economic issue. In fact, beyond race, beyond everything, that individualization.
It's all about profit, you know?
And the individualization, this notion, and it's critical here. So I want to underline it, that a movie like that focuses precisely on the individual nastiness, on the personal failure, so that the horrible slave owner, right? And that essentially then suggests that, well, what's the solution? A nice slave owner, you know, a nice master. That's what we have to wait for. And I didn't think about it, but it just popped into my head a couple of seconds ago. We had... And we will present in some format in the future an academic event, a debate, kind of between different economic political positions, two nights ago here at the college. And I mean, I was filming, I wasn't participating, but yeah, I will post, and we might make some, yeah, we have some insidious plans, you know. This is from Blackadder, one of my favorite shows. I wonder if my kids are listening. I have a cunning plan. But anyway, essentially, there was an argument, very compelling argument, about Whole Foods. Oh, can I even say that? I don't know.
Sure.
Am I endorsing them? I suppose I'm not going to fully, I'm going to mix endorsement come in here.
No endorsements.
It's not an endorsement.
Yeah, sure.
They are known to and truly offer good working conditions, really way better than the average. But at the same time, their CEO was a major advocate of anti-raising the minimum wage that we talked about last week, was it? Time flies when you're
right.
having fun.
And also healthcare. He was against the
yeah,
public option.
Yeah,
right. So the dude, the guy, the gentleman?
The entrepreneur?
Who was there advocating a strong conservative side, very capably, and I believe him 100% that he cares about poverty, even cares about income distribution, you know, he does. But I challenge him, I didn't challenge him yet
somewhere.
In a sense, but he was, I totally believe he does. Essentially said, we don't need minimum wage, we don't need food stamps, we don't need stimulus, we don't need anything. Our government, because all we need is good masters. Like the CEO, he didn't say it like that, right? He said, but you know, privately provided. There was a labor union drive, and the people in Whole Foods said, we don't need a labor union. Our boss is good to us. This is to me, I mean, and again, you know, this is not a kind of the standard we hear in the news where I'd call him now names he's not, you know? But I think it's a deep, deep mistake, and I think maybe some of the worst, really, racism, sexism, all those kind of discriminations operates just like propaganda, worse when it's not obvious, in a sense, you know?
But it, you know, is it possible, too, that he's just seeing he's looking at it through the eyes of his business, which is not really a mega business? You know, maybe he's still looking at it from a neighborhood type store, and he's going like, okay, what do we need a union for when I can take care of it myself, you know, in person? But if you're talking about like General Motors or something like that, then it's a totally different attitude. I mean, they'll come out in their little conferences, you know, for the stockholders, and we care about this company, but they don't. Bottom line is what they're going to get at the end of the year, you know, as far as their benefits.
No. But I'm even just like the general issue of that I think that this movie and certainly other movies that I have seen. Though again, really, I read enough. I think we all read enough about it. Though, I will make sure I watch it, and if I have something to add, I will, or to correct. But this notion that how do we get a better life? Where does progress come from? How can we assure a better future for our children? These deep, maybe the deepest questions people ask since almost the dawn of time, certainly since the beginning of civilized, stratified society. The answer that, hope for a good master is so fundamentally unsatisfying, and it links with feminism, yep, too. We could, plug in Secrets of the Fairies.
There you see, that's right.
Right? When is it? Wednesday 9 a.m.
I know you're there.
Yeah, I try. I'm at two places at the same time, actually.
That's
in that
right.
Show,
that's right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's been magic. Same thing too about the princesses, right? I mean, women, what do you need? A good man to take care of you.
The white picket fence.
It's interesting that you bring it up, because if you contrast, say, something like Django with, you know, the spook.
Avatar?
With the spook again, right? That film about the CIA agent.
Yeah, I need to watch that.
Right, the latter movie, The Spook, has this sense of community. So how do you get, better life? Not through good masters, but through freedom,
struggle,
through education, through struggle, through building a positive,
a movement, or
a community or what have you. And, you contrast that with how do you get a better life? Well, you need some sort of a good guy or, a white savior where, the bounty hunter comes in and, saves.
Yeah, like Avatar. Remember you going like off the wall on that movie, which I very much enjoyed it, especially because of the art design and everything. But I mean, yeah.
I actually fell asleep through it, to be quite honest.
Well,
I found it very boring.
But yeah, last night, I mean, my students all looked funny at me when we discussed this, and at some point I started mentioning the beauty, grace, and even sexiness of the blue people, and they started looking at me funny. That was like a slightly bit of an awkward moment there.
Is that why
I didn't fall asleep.
Is that why the golf cart for security was parked?
Right? but Jock says, that was a good example, I suppose, for what could be termed as a liberal or progressive racism, right? Again, it's even obscene in the sense that the white savior can do everything better than the locals.
If you look at it, remember, so this is a kind of a business, and so pushing this white savior notion, right, kind of coincides nicely with the interests of the war machine, right? So how do you actually sell wars, right? Well, we need a country like the United States or the West to intervene in these backward areas, and we need to help them. We need to intervene in Syria, and, we need to intervene in Libya and overthrow the evil dictators in Iran and so on and so forth. And this is what these white savior-ish movies are supposed to desensitize the entire populace to. So it makes it easier for the war machine or the military industrial complex to actually sell you a war, because you have things, you have this entertainment industry that's selling it to you already, and you're eating it up. And
that, again, interesting point, right? I mean, think of that. That's already several stages removed, right? It's interesting how this functions in this political economy. Right? I mean, we spoke to some extent on here and there on a prisoner industrial complex, and you see the racism in that is quite obscene. I believe I read I saw an article, so I just read the blurb of it on The Nation about how the big boom now is in the private prisons for immigrants.
Yes.
And since our president is arresting illegal or whatever immigrants faster than ever before, there's great profit in it. But here what Jay is saying is that, look, I mean, this impacts well beyond these realms. You know, so that we then apply what we are told about black Americans to anybody in the world that's not exactly like us. What are they doing? They're doing something fun behind my back. You know?
That's the scene that I was telling you about.
Yeah,
yeah, unfortunately, I was going to air it, but I think it's rated R.
Yeah, okay.
But it's a great scene, and Chasing Amy, you know, it just really puts out that whole...
Well, on Facebook topic. Again, though. I don't know. I remember today when he was still on Facebook, he got into repeated trouble with Facebook. But no, never really, well. Never go your fault. I mean, but the whole system is messed up. I agree. But, okay, I mean, so we have this element, and maybe something to raise is this issue of, oh, we won't say it, you know? It's no longer in polite society, though I'll admit to you that I've lived in the South for 20 years, right? I percolated up into Virginia at some point, but never quite made it beyond the Mason-Dixon line. And I was pretty much far away from it now. Not that I care, but the South was good to me. And I, in fact, adored the culture, living in UNC in Chapel Hill, where both of us got our degrees. So let's shout out, right? UNC Chapel Hill, great school, great place.
How was that experience?
Oh, great.
Really?
Oh, yeah. You know, the graduate school there. I mean, but even today, as I write recommendations for students and stuff, the deals are not there. It's not the same thing. Even the same wonderful school, you know, less funding, less conditions, less staffing, everything going to a word I cannot say on radio.
Yeah, you know,
even the greatest things.
I've landed there, but I've never actually been to
Harder.
The town. And a lot of my friends from Florida are moving up there.
And, oh, it's totally.
And they're all saying, well, you know, Florida's becoming Latin America, so, you know, we want to go back to America. I mean, I've had actually people tell me, I'm going like, well, okay, just keep on going north, you know. When you hit the Eskimos, then
when
sure
I lie awake
address,
late at night grinding my teeth, I often think that going down into the rainforests of...
supposedly that's the migration now is up to North Carolina.
Interesting. Well, I mean, yeah, it's grown too much, by the way. It's kind of, yeah, there's a lot of spoilage, frankly,
right,
from the good old days where I used to ride my mountain bike or there. But anyway, so where were we before I was so, you know, totally,
we were at
totally
the prison industrial complex and, of course, private prisons for
right,
immigrants.
Oh, and then this kind of duplicity, right, where we don't talk, yes, okay, got it. My adult brain manages to kind of click back, kind of. But I'm always, when I go, I'm traveling around different places, in the world, wherever it be, including the South United States. It's really interesting. It's a whole culture, and I'm not, wasn't that familiar with it too, because it's badly presented. There's a whole study there too. I mean, Jay and I have been talking about it a long time. Let me recommend one of my favorite books, the late Joe Baggert's, Deer Hunting with Jesus, Dispatches from the American Class War, that talks about how, what about the poor whites, you know? It's the last group that it's polite to denigrate with racial epithets, even in polite society. Right? Redneck, white trash, you know? And he points out that they weren't the slave owners, actually, right? But anyway... So I saw that the good old boys, I sought to be authentically with people to discover the culture beyond the graduate school and such. And there, you know, I sat with some good old boys sometimes and, whoo, yeah, the N-word is not used with, it doesn't finish with an A, how they spell it. It finishes with an R. No problem, you know. So I saw that stuff and, okay, interesting, ever the anthropologist. It's kind of scary, really.
You don't have to go that far. I mean, I've seen it here.
I had to go, because, again, Chapel Hill is such a such a nice, you know...
Quaint little neighborhood.
Quaint,
yeah.
Educated, balanced.
It's kind of like the bubble here. Yeah,
it's very bubble. I mean, you know, three huge schools, you know, highest PhD per capita ratio on the planet Earth, I believe,
right,
is in Chapel Hill. etc. It's a nice place, nice bubble. The arch conservative late Senator Jesse Helms actually wanted to build a wall around Chapel Hill to isolate his people from the insidious influence of all these, you know.
Well, that guy would have excluded his daughter, huh?
I don't even know. No.
Well, he has a supposedly a daughter from.
No, that's Dick Cheney.
No. Jesse Helms.
Also.
Yes.
Well, yes. Interesting.
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely, he does.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that's. Oh, well, you know, that's. Poor child is all I can
say. That's what I'm saying. It's kind of like, okay. I mean, you know, that's the kind of dilemma that people put themselves in. You know, they hate. And then all of a sudden, their son or daughter winds up marrying the person they hate. And then they have to come back in the loop and go like,
or not.
Whoa, you know, these people have culture. Oh. You know, they're just like me. Then they realize how dumb they've been all this time.
Well, so Noam Chomsky talks about it a little bit too with the business CEOs whose practices push costs onto the population. Mm-hmm. So look at the CEO, you know, of BP or something that's polluting the planet and contributing to global heating, right? His children are going to have to deal with that. His grandchildren are going to have to deal with that. But he can go into the boardroom and say, well, yeah, let's drill for oil in the Arctic with no safety containment equipment. And you know,
go don't worry, we won't have leaks. We'll be careful.
Granddaughter.
It doesn't matter because they can actually, with the money they make, they can even buy a complete house a la Michael Jackson, completely insulated, you know.
Yeah, I expect pretty soon as the climate starts, I mean, now the argument really scientifically is whether we're facing a Holocaust or just a massive, you know, a lot of business collapses, economic decline due to the climate change. Hey, another shout out I should do for the, you know, East Orlando Times, a new little newspaper I wrote a couple of words about on a very interesting project last night. So I guess it's coming out today or something. I linked them on the page. Give me a few more days. I got 100 hours and 12 worked in 12 hours to do it, and then I'll try and catch up. There's a spring break, and spring break is not really a time for leisure, but a time to catch up to at least half of what you absolutely have to do and never get to do. Right? That's the world in which we live.
Unfortunately, some of my professors don't understand that.
Yeah, there is. Well, okay, that's a funny thing. You know, as a professor, there is a little macho thing in professors, you know?
Yeah, so what is
it's
that?
It's like, I don't hang out too much with that, but there is something like that. It's funny, and I pointed out to my friends who, you know, professors who you know, it's like, hey, I make my students read, you know, 800 pages a week.
Oh, my God, I have a name that's busting through my brain right now. Should I say it? No.
Yeah, you know. No. I'm even better, manlier than you. I make them read 900 pages per week. I'm like, you know, I kind of giggle.
Trust me, we all know about that.
I mean, although I'm too easy. You know, my students, yeah, consider yourself lucky. I've become a little bit too easy, probably. Maybe I tightened it up the minute I have the time to tighten up, because tightening up requires hard work, actually, you know? Because I won't take points off random. You know, if I'm taking points, I have to tell you why. And that takes a long time. And then when you teach almost 100 students a semester, each comment, and before you know it, and then you can't publish.
But your courses
enough
are
of my problems.
Your courses are different to some of the professors that I've taken, because you work their minds. You don't work their fingers to the bone.
At least those who want to.
The way I look at it is the way you're teaching, or at least opening up our minds, is much more effective than some of these.
I thank you for it.
You know, 4, 5, 7 book. You know, write essay. You know, 2-3 essays a week for just one class. You know, it's like we have a life too, professor.
It's like the old metaphor, or no, it's not. Wouldn't be a. It's a euphemism. I don't know what it is. Some English professor
especially
help me out here.
Especially Holt students. I mean, we also
you
work.
You also work, so we usually know that you have to cut
and,
more flexibility.
And we have to take care of our cats and dogs. You know, those of us who don't believe in having kids.
Who have
know.
Family. You know.
Yeah, exactly.
Or responsible enough
responsible,
to not have
children. See, that's my contribution to the world, you know, ecology.
But yeah, I hear you.
I don't want to keep infecting the world with my genes. There's too many mad, crazy people out there already. Yeah, you know.
Like, you want kids? Adopt.
Exactly.
And I say that, but of course, I completely selfishly and...
But your genes are good, though.
Oh, he's so good. Yeah. What would I do? I mean, he's like daddy.
Have you met the rest of the family?
Yeah, I have.
Oh, my God.
I have.
The little daughter alone, I would not get into a debate with her because I know I look like a total...
I pity the fool.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're amazing. So, yeah, you can go ahead
That's
and clone yourself
sweet.
And
Thank
all
you.
That.
Thank you.
We sanction anything you want to do.
I'm blushing here already. Yeah. But yeah, selfish. Yeah, Dawkins' selfish gene. That book kind of influenced me a little. But anyway, so it's like we talk about, can you say stuff? Can you behave? Can you wear? There's the whole element, and there's serious work on it, and it should be obvious to all that our eyes are open, that in some sense we got over the fact that, you know, like, if you're black, I don't want to, like, for example, right, or woman, okay, whatever, don't want nothing to do with you. I'm all right if you're black, so long as you behave exactly like me, then that's okay. Right, if you look, and for foreigners, you see, you know, I mean, you have to be cool. You have to look like an American on MTV. If you are, all right, you know, wear a suit, okay, you know, but we can't deal. I mean, look at how people have some problems I posted a lot about Dr. Cornel West, precisely because, I mean, he's got, don't worry about his vocabulary, right?
Exactly,
Do not.
Exactly.
But he chooses to often express himself in a traditional kind of evangelical, right, liberation theology kind of mode of speech, right?
I love
Or
hip hop,
right? I mean, I introduced, like, my favorite American poet, Immortal Technique, to some of my older, you know, highly open-minded buddies, and it took him a while to get over the, you know, the dirty world, the anger, the violence, you know, that involves, and to see the sophistication of the lyrics beyond. And then there's economic reality, right? So, and that applies, I think, to a lot of these things. Women, you know, it's all good now. We're no longer sexist. You're allowed to work, thank you very much. You even allowed to have your own bank account. We're equal now.
You're allowed to even, you know, help kill Bin Laden, as Michael Moore said. He had an article about it. I don't know if you saw his Facebook, but he said that, you know, Zero Dark Thirty was a chick flick.
Zero Dark Thirty.
About female quotable women. People, right? Zero Dark Thirty is a chick flick. Jay Gordon. 2013.
I mean, that's what he actually said, and it was it was completely absurd. I think I was the only person that, and David Swanson were the only people that got on him for it, because he was saying how the movie doesn't really support torture. It doesn't at all do that. It makes it horrific and so on and so forth. And then you have it's strange because you have a person on the left saying, vouching for this movie and actually vouching for this female director, and then you have someone on the right like McCain who's actually writing letters and saying, look, this movie is completely inaccurate, torture didn't help the
exactly because McCain, whatever his ideology, he knows what he's talking about. He's not propagandizing. He was tortured. And he knows that, you know, he knows it doesn't work and all those kind of things that people
right.
inside know, you know,
right,
what
sure.
doesn't, and what the kind of intelligence that leads you to...
Right.
Of course, you know, he's a little bit out there too, maybe because of the torture.
Sure.
So.
Yeah. Always on multiple. I mean, there's a lot of nasty things to say about John McCain, but that's not one of them.
Yeah, well, like...
There's a lot of nasty things to say about everybody, right?
Like the bank that he helped, he didn't help, he just kind of like stood back and watched the...
Savings
fall apart. Yeah,
Okay. Yeah. No, ganging up on John McCain. Yep. Not this morning.
Striking
anyway.
One up for the old people.
So yeah, you have someone on the left like Michael Morris telling you that Zero Dark Thirty doesn't support torture, and as one of his former employees put it, I won't mention his name. As one of his former employees put it, he said, look, it's a business. He is just a rich white director supporting another rich white director.
Exactly.
And
Are we fair, though? I mean, after all, the guy devoted his artistic. Yeah, he's rich. He's successful. You know, I want to be the advocate. You know, he does what he does. It's not really, I mean, my criticism often, it's not a documentary. It's, there's no analysis in his movies. I mean, there are essentially many very good points happen in his movies, but it's agitprop, you know what we call it. It's agitation propaganda. It's not really a documentary.
Well, I think this is a lot of, you know, I have mixed feelings about it, mm-hmm. but I think this is a lot of my trouble with the left in America.
Mm-hmm.
They're not consistent. They're not at all consistent. Here it is, you linked to an article by Adolf Reed, who talks about how these movie executives trivialize mm-hmm. Segregation and slavery mm-hmm. and turn an anti-racist struggle mm-hmm. into one about personalized individualism. Yeah. But yet when he criticizes the anti-racist movement of today, that's exactly what he's saying. He's saying that they're not clear, they don't have clear goals, they're far too individualized. So I'm not sure who he's reading, or, you know, I don't want to rag on him, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt.
But Reed's, yeah.
But you know, if you look at someone...
Hey, you can post that on Facebook.
I know you can.
If you look at
pass
someone...
Pass it along on Google Plus and I'll post it to
you. If you look at someone like Michelle Alexander, who writes about the new Jim Crow, about mass incarceration, she is incredibly skeptical about reforming the prison industrial complex or getting rid of the pernicious effects of the prison industrial complex through elimination of the drug war.
Mm.
What she has in mind and what she alludes to is actually the goal of prison abolitionists to eliminate prisons altogether, right? To have a sort of justice that is not punitive,
yet instead
is compassionate, etc. and that's a very clear goal.
But the prison lobby will not have any of that. They want the drug wars. It's wonderful.
Right. That's a very clear goal. So mm-hmm. when he says that, look, the anti-racist movement is about perceptions and escaping whiteness, as you know, he kind of rags on mm-hmm. the anti-racist Tim Wise for this, and he says, look, you know, his solution is, you know, escaping whiteness and changing perceptions. And even if you take something like that, where, you know, Tim Wise encourages individuals to change their perceptions, there are objective ways of doing that as well, that involve democratization of media space,
yep.
that involves inclusion not of... only ethnic minorities to discuss the representations and the perceptions that our culture and our cultural institutions spit out, but also people with diverse ideologies to discuss this kind of thing, right? Instead of it have it being monopolized by people. Those are incredibly clear, objective, social kind of goals for
maybe
for,
I mean, you know, we've been talking about these complicated issues for some time now, you know, and it they're very complicated on multiple levels, but I want to be clear, I'm not, I mean, perception is important, so the notion of precisely opening all these spaces to voices that you don't hear, all of these things are extremely important. In fact, you know, really, we some of us here try and do it in the school a lot, and the econ department, we work really, really hard. We keep working hard to have a more pluralistic, multiple perspective view, so we don't just, you know, we hear everybody's voices about the economy.
I do have to say, you need better coffee there, though.
Where?
At...
Oh, in that?
Yeah, an espresso machine. Come on, it's Rollins.
Espresso machine. I'm not chair anymore, but I'll pass along.
Okay, yeah, just
Wait. Let me sink in just a little bit again. Let me. I'm not chair anymore.
That's right.
Okay, just a moment of pleasure there. Thank you very much. I'm very happy about that. 3-year sentence, quite enough. But the real economics matter. In that sense, I thought Adolf Reed's article, I mean, kind of, yeah, I criticize maybe the it's all about the symbolism. It seems to me important to go both, right? So if you say, you know, we have a black president, sure. But we also, but the employment perspectives of a black man who hasn't been to jail, which in itself is somewhat of an economic miracle, probably, you know, to pull that off, or hasn't been arrested, right? No record, difficult to do. Has a better job perspective than a white ex-con in America today. You know, I have friends, an ex-boss, Art Goldsmith in Washington and Lee University, Sandy Darity in UNC Chapel Hill and Duke. I mean, it's been 30 years, they're doing massive statistic research on this stuff, and they find these, I mean, the racism is very much alive and well at the economic level, in the job market, yet we kind of pretend, oh, no, it's over, it's a post-racial America. I'm like, okay, look at wages. Same thing like with women, right? Oh, no, we're not sexist anymore. Really, who pays for the lack of healthcare? Not in money, maybe, right? But in suffering, you know, who takes the cost? Lack of childcare, lousy schools, women, overwhelmingly, right? So to me, as an economist at least, there's no justice without economic justice. Though I think perceptions are definitely, I'm not arguing, perceptions are very important here, if nothing right. else, because it dupes the public into misconception.
And I agree with Adolf Reed on that score, but where I, you know, it's kind of ironic that he's ragging on people for actually strawmanning the anti-racist movements of the past when he's actually writing papers for, you know, Doug Henwood that he kind of likes, strawmanning the anti-racist movements right here and right now, when they in fact do have very clear goals that do focus on community and ideological diversity and economic justice so on and so forth.
Yeah, that was really, I mean, this whole argument, again, you know, there is, within the progressive left in America, there's this ongoing, somewhat circular and difficult argument that can be summarized, reduced to, is it race or is it class? And it's obviously both.
Right.
But what's the interplay? And there seems to be, I mean, like Jay was saying, in the left, unsatisfying impotence, in a way, to deal with that. Look at the Occupy movement. Maybe it failed because a few blocks away. There were, you know, Cornel West was getting arrested for stop and frisk.
Right,
how come they weren't
doing that, exactly?
And like, pick up and go there now. You know, it was, oh no race. You know, it's like, there was a movement back in my old haunt in Israel too. You know, a kind of Occupy movement. Massive, yeah. You know, well, and, but
Occupy they were here like,
we mustn't talk about the occupation, the Palestinian conflict, because that will then, we'll lose our numbers.
So,
it's about economics. And that movement failed because they didn't deal with the fact that the occupation economy is what's driving the poor poverty of Jews also in Israel.
But the Occupy movement is basically posturing. Come on, let's be real.
No.
There wasn't even a real movement. It was just a bunch of people who, you know, pretty much pulled all the crazies off of the street to, you know, do the virtual stuff. And then some of them with legitimate, you know, ideas and issues and all that, but it was more kind of like what I used to see in San Francisco on the weekends, in Coal Valley, where the granola people would sit around and, you know, protest with their little coffee and stuff. And I mean, you know what I'm talking about.
So maybe you can have me back on next time, because I was involved in the Occupy movement in Chicago, and I will say that for its limitations, there were a number of things that I liked about it. It identified the right enemy, actually.
Right, but the movements, even in the 60s.
That's huge.
Even in the
right
60s.
There. Right, instead of hating Samuel Jackson and Django, right?
Right.
Instead of, you know, all of that, you know, backstabbing, when we don't you notice it? You all know it.
Come on.
There. You know, you're stabbing, everybody's stabbing each other,
right.
You know? Stab who you can, not the guy who's really hurting you, not the guy who's making you angry. Stab,
right.
Obviously, metaphorically.
Right.
No, you'll take it out on the person beneath
right.
you, you
right.
know?
But they have the right enemy, and with
But they should have kept on going.
With Occupy Chicago, at least, when I had that scathing criticism about their exclusion of racial troubles and saying that now that white college kids are at the bottom of the labor ladder and competing with you know, Chinese labor and prison labor and slave labor in Apopka, right? They're occupying, you know.
But my beef with Occupy is that, okay, as much as I criticize the 60s movement, you know, most of them have sold out and now they're on top of the corporations and own everything. They're still trying. They're still kind of in their own little messed up way. There's still a movement there from the 60s trying to make things change. Occupy just all of a sudden stopped. I mean, they just dropped
all
off
of
the face
of... All of a sudden, they were beaten to a pulp. Yeah. Goldman Sachs paid the NYPD $1.5 million.
And you had the technology behind you. That's what's so upsetting.
Whatever.
I mean, we had to use messenger pigeons back then. I mean, and we still, you know, got the message.
Listen,
come on.
Look at us. Here we go. We're starting, the 60s was better than the... Stop it. SDFU, people, you know, solidarity, everybody, you know.
Well, that's what
clicking like don't cut it. You have to go into the streets, you know.
Yeah. And if we don't go, they're going to beat us
strike.
Up. They're kind of looming over us, and, you know, we don't want...
Yeah, we run out of time again, barely, but that's okay. Well, we'll do this more, you know. That's kind of the thing.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter.
Tell me that I was not.
Banks are running wild in the street. Nobody anywhere seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it.
And remember, you can catch us again here on Punkonomics every Friday from 9 to 10, where we'll discuss all sorts of crazy issues that are not really so crazy when you look at the economic perspective of it. Go ahead, say goodbye, Benny.
Goodbye, and podcast will be out, and can't wait for next week.
Oh, did you hear that? No, they didn't hear that. Say goodbye.
Well, what did I say again?
Yeah, I think you
said
goodbye.
Podcast will be up soon. Goodbye.
Views or opinions of the station, its management, or employees.
When Little Red Riding Hood undressed and went to get into bed, for she was quite astonished to see the way her grandmother was leaving.
Discover the secrets of the fairies every Wednesday morning from 9 to 10 on WPRK 91.5, the voice of Rollins College and the best of basement radio.
What big arms you have, Grandmother!
The better to puppy with my child.
What big ears you have, Grandmother!
The better to hear you with my child.